The satisfaction of finishing your pedal board for the 38th time.
Hey everyone, I'm outside the Ryman Auditorium for today's episode, which is featured inside the Ryman Auditorium with the Black Pumas. 2 years ago, I got to see them at a sold-out performance, and it produced one of my favorite Ryman moments where Eric Burton grabbed his ES-125 from 1959, took to the balcony, and performed Fast Car by himself. It was memorable, and I'll never forget it the rest of my life. Fast forward to filming this rig rundown a couple weeks ago, we started off with Adrian, who's kind of the musical director of the band, and he had three key instruments he used, each one serving its own purpose, but one specific Fender was really cool because it's nothing like I've ever seen 15 years doing this job. And it'll have some Fender freaks questioning why he did it and others questioning where he can get one. And the coolest thing I thought about Adrian's story, not only is what he's done with music in Black Pumas and other acts in Austin, but was when his parents found out that he was flunking UT because he was spending all his time at various clubs in Austin performing, they gave him an ultimatum of, you can go back to UT and we'll continue funding your school, you know, schoolwork, going to college, but you gotta leave your guitar here. Well, you can imagine how that led, or that unfolded. Next up was bassist Brendan Bond, and he was a hoot. He reminded me and Perry of Norm Macdonald, but like in a very comedic, musical way. He had us in stitches, and he was just a very good guy to be around. He told a very enjoyable story about how he was inspired to buy a 73 P bass after visiting the show, Wilco Loft in Chicago. And last but not least was tech Brian Wilkinson, who filled in for Eric Burton, showed off three key instruments, and it was just a great time to spend with those guys, and I hope you enjoy the rig rundown. Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. Today I'm at the Ryman Auditorium with Adrian of the Black Pumas. Adrian, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for doing this. This is a treat. I saw you guys 2 years ago, I think about the same time of year, and I was telling Brian, the tech, who we'll be talking to in a minute, one of the coolest moments I've seen a show here, which has probably been over 100 times, is when Eric took an encore and went on the balcony and did Fast Car. I don't think I've ever seen anyone take to the balcony for an encore, so that was a cool thing. I know you've probably done it at other venues, but for someone to take it in, that was a cool moment for me as a fan to check that out and be a part of.
Yeah, man, it's always amazing playing with Eric, because that's a little planned, but you never know what he's gonna do, and he's happy to do whatever to, you know, to put on a good show like that.
Yeah, well, getting to you, you know, people know you, and we're talking to you because of the Black Pumas, but you're kind of a fixture in Austin music. You had a Grammy, you know, you've been nominated several times with the Black Pumas before that, but before that you were obviously already won a Grammy. Mm-hmm. So you're just a music man, you got your studio that mm-hmm. Brian says there's tons of gear at.
Yeah.
Before we get into what you do bring touring, what do you choose, or how do you choose of all the gear that you have? Like, what are the decisions and what kind of things go into those decisions to be like, I'm gonna bring out this special guitar or this type of amp or these pedals, because I'm sure you have so many treats at home. How do you make those decisions about what you're gonna take, you know, precious things, vintage things?
Yeah.
So like, how do you break down that decision?
Yeah, there's been a couple of guitars, one in particular that I have that I had to kind of retire from bringing out
really?
Live. It was really fragile, and something was always happening to it. It was one of my favorite ones. Had to stop bringing that. This particular Tele was designed by the Fender Custom Shop. And I've designed a couple of guitars with Fender, but this one they actually made sort of as a surprise for us. Apparently they just like put our first album on repeat and tried to match those sounds.
Wow.
Handed this as a surprise, and was already reliced and whatnot. And this has been my absolute favorite guitar since then.
Really?
And it's the perfect guitar for Black Pumas. Like, they just nailed it.
So what guitar did it replace? Was it another Tele in terms of the one that you retired?
No, the guitar I retired was actually years ago with touring with other bands.
Okay.
It was a Gibson 446.
Okay.
Just kind of a rare, like 335-ish meets Les Paul custom shop that they made like a short amount of those. And I used to play that a lot, and I had to retire that one years ago. It was always getting messed up, so.
Now, what were some of the designs or feedback that you gave Fender when you tried to make your own instrument? What were some things that you were chasing?
So I'm fairly new to Telecasters. It's probably only been actually since around Black Pumas, maybe like a couple years before that, actually. I'd say maybe 6-7 years have I really been on the Teles. I've always liked you know, semi-hollows and thin lines. So I've that was some of the thing. We designed one in particular that that was a thin line semi-hollow. Okay. I like that resonation, yeah. You know, of hollow bodies and stuff. So I wanted like best of both worlds. Made one with them. Always like, you know, tremolo bars as well. Yeah. Put that on there. But again, I made now two guitars with them that I gave them all my feedback. This one they handed me and I'm like, this one's the best one. That, you know, like I'm not the most technical guy, yeah, in terms of like pickups and wiring and whatnot. So they just got it right with this one. But I do have a really cool semi-hollow. So I like to get the bite of a Tele. You know, as you can see, I get humbuckers in them too. Yeah. I like a little bit of that still as well. But I also like a little bit of that resonation. So that's big for me. You'll see with some of my other guitars.
Okay. Now, when it comes to this one specifically, between the bridge pickup and the neck humbucker, where do you live most?
Pretty much always on the neck.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Every once in a while for studio use and when I need like a little bit more versatility, I will switch.
Okay.
Or sometimes go in between for some of that, you know. But generally for the live show, this is where I live.
Okay.
You know.
And I noticed, and this is a thing that you were part of our Big Five series a couple years ago where you talked about, I think it was five different questions we asked you. And one of the things you said it was your secret weapon was your classical background, yeah, and that you were like kind of shredding your nails. Mm-hmm. But I noticed in the intro you were playing with a pick. So for Black Pumas, would you say you're using the pick 50-50 or how does that go?
75% and then nails for the rest of it. And that's another reason that... you know, I can control tone and stuff without having to switch too much, because I think switching back and forth between fingers to, yeah, you know, soft finger to nail to pick, I can kind of control tone and volume a lot. Like, so I do that a lot. Just 75% pick.
Okay.
I recently finally had to break down and get acrylic nails because I was just always breaking them because it's kind of rough.
I was going to ask how
so you
take
can
care
this,
of them.
This janky ass acrylic nail here. Yeah. That's the secret weapon. Yeah.
Now, what do you, I'm sure tonally too, besides the dynamics that you're playing, is it also just the nails or the thumb against the strings are almost provide a different tone than the yeah, more aggressive attack of a plectrum too?
Absolutely. That I'm super grateful that when I started playing, I originally started with classical and flamenco. So I didn't really start playing with a pick even when I was in rock bands, like in high school and stuff, until I was in college.
Okay.
When it was just like, okay, I needed to really cut through and get like more attack. So I didn't start using a pick till after high school. And I was already, you know, playing rock stuff and all that. So
now would you say you're pretty comfortable with a pick now?
Like, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if it still favored the kind of finger style, classical style playing.
Honestly, I have to like really think about it. I would guess it's 75 to 25, but might be more. I don't know. If you see me with a pick in my mouth, that means I decided to take it out and mess with it.
Now, you bring up college, and in that Big Five video that everyone should check out on the Premier Guitar channel, is that you had said that your parents took away your guitar when you were in college. Is this a true story?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell real quick to this audience?
Yeah, I went off to college, UT Austin, and just got obsessed with the music scene there, was playing in bands, and that's all I was doing.
Yeah. You know?
And I went there, to get a degree. And first semester, I think I failed, like, almost everything. And they pulled me aside and were like... Because I'm from Laredo, Texas, which is south of there. And they're like, you can either stay in Laredo or we'll keep your guitar and you can go back to Austin and you need to focus like next semester. And
yeah,
I was like, keep that guitar, man. And then I went back to Austin, took my book money, bought a guitar. At
like how quick did you go buy the Squire?
Like
Squire.
The day I got there. went to buy a Squire Tele. And actually one of the guitars I designed with Fender is based on the first guitar that I bought,
yeah,
there when I moved to Austin, which is that it was a thin line Tele.
Wow. How do your parents feel about it now?
Yeah, they just crack up. They were just here last night, so yeah.
Oh, that's cool. You got brought them to Mother Church.
Yeah.
Well, before we move on and maybe hear a little bit of the Tele, what strings are you using on this one?
These 10s, I can't remember. Brian, my boy here.
46.
Okay.
9 to 46. Yeah. Is there a reason why 9 out of 46?
I like to get a bigger low end here, but honestly, a lot of times Brian will just be like, hey, I'm gonna go to 9s for you, I'm gonna go to 10s, and I just kind of run with it. I tried to go thicker, and I've settled back onto 9 for a little bit, just a little bit more versatility, and you know, bending is a little bit easier and stuff like that. But there are a lot of guitars I have like in my studio where I'll go up to like 11s and 12s and stuff like for tone, but that's not for live use, you know, so this is a good like happy medium for
okay
me.
Well, we'll probably revisit the Tele when we get to the pedal board section, but let's cruise on to another guitar.
Okay.
Adrian, tell me about this guitar.
Yeah, this is a Gibson 345. Was originally actually looking for a 335 for something, and I think they were out of, and it was a loaner from Gibson at first, and they gave me a 345. A good friend of mine has had a 345 for years. The Veritone switch is really cool.
So you use it. Sometimes people neglect it.
I use it in the studio a lot.
Okay.
Live, I need to simplify for like live applications. You'll see like with some of the pedals and things, like it can't be too drastic. It doesn't always cut through. Comes in super handy in the studio. I used to have a 335 way back in the day, and they didn't have one. They loaned me this. Just fell in love with it. On top of that, it just looks cool as hell. The color was super dope. And this one, again, like semi-hollow, humbuckers, you know, plays a different role than that Fender. When I need to go on to some fuzz and stuff like that, you get a little bit more of that beef.
Yeah. Now, what were you using back with Grupo Fantasmo?
That was a Gibson 446. Yeah,
okay.
That's what I used for a long time with them. And then that's when I started using a little Tele. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I see a little ding on the headstock.
Yeah, man, I was coming.
Battle Scar?
Yeah, that with this airport. Playing with Hermanos Gutierrez, who you guys did one of these for in Mexico City. And I got lazy. I'm usually really good about my guitars on a flight. But I've been so lucky for years. I've had tons of friends' guitars break. I just got sloppy and just took a crappy case, checked it. And I just decided to check it. And I never do because I'm just, nothing ever happens, you know. And I just like opened it and was like, God damn it, you know. So yeah, we haven't been able to get it looking as pretty as it was, but.
Hey, sometimes people swear that they sound better with the headstock.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
repairs.
I don't know if that's a thing they tell themselves, you know, to make the guilt go away.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've heard people say that. Before we move on to another one, can we hear this one real quick?
Yeah, yeah. So this one, my tremolo is kind of always on. This one, I don't know if this is coming through the monitor. Yeah, so what I mainly use this one for is I have a separate pedal board, which we can get to, which is just a DI fuzz. I wanted that sound of just a fuzz, like plugged into a console kind of DI thing without the amp. Tried all kinds of stuff. I tried different fuzz pedals through my amp. I tried a separate amp going directly into the amp and diming it.
Yeah.
Couldn't get that sound, so we set up a separate pedal board with just a DI, just a fuzz into like a tiniest bit of a reverb direct into the PA. And that's when this guitar usually comes out. It just has that like... So that's mainly, there's a tiny bit of reverb on it, but.
Imagine that's how you recorded the song that gets, the song was recorded
that,
directly
so
into
the song that I did that, actually, Eric actually played on that one. And, but I do that fuzz sound on a lot of stuff, that like DI, you know, that's my favorite fuzz sound. If I could do that all night, I would do that all night, you know. I've done that on like both our albums, a million things, so.
Cool. Well, I think we should move on to another one.
Yeah.
All right, Adrian, this is a cool guitar, but I bet you the story's even cooler, so tell me all about it.
So, to start with, we worked closely with Matt Farrar and Fender's Custom Shop to design a couple of guitars. Eric designed one, and I designed one as well. And went back and forth on what I have. I'd already designed a Tele with them that I have a one-off kind of prototype of. And I already have that other Tele that I played. So I was like, what else could I possibly add to something? I don't like to... You know, as Brian will tell you, like, I don't feel the need to switch guitars on every song because I kind of try to control tone here and with pedals and stuff. So, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to make a guitar. So I was like really thinking like Jazzmaster again, back to a semi-hollow. You know, I like that option of like getting that feedback of that resonation. Pickup wise, I think this kind of gold foil was based on like another guitar I had. I'm not like most technical with pickups. I don't remember. I told them what I liked and they wanted a humbucker on it. The other thing with it, so this is also that natural wood is also based off that first guitar that I bought when I moved to Austin was also like a thin line Tele looked a lot like this. And what I wanted, the pedal, the effect I use the most, I almost kind of, it's hard to not use it on every song, is tremolo. I'm just a tremolo freak. I just think everything just sounds better. You know, I just try not to use it and I just end up turning it on. So I was thinking of cool stuff that you could do with guitars. I have this cool Vox bass from the 60s that has like built-in fuzz. And I love weirdo kind of stuff like that. And I had seen this Jack White guitar where he like pulled out a little like He has one that had a little like kind of walkie-talkie microphone, yeah, and it goes through the circuit, through the amp, and it just sounded crazy. And I was like, why don't we just do like some kind of onboard effect? And yeah, I was just thinking, you know, for like certain gigs and stuff, like sometimes I'll, if it's another gig, not Pumas, but all I will take is my Flint Strymon, like, and has just tremolo and reverb. And I'm, yeah, like, if I could just have the tremolo here, then I don't need anything. So yeah, we put an onboard tremolo, and they laughed for like a second, but otherwise we're like, that sounds super cool, and they were like way into the idea, you know. So yeah,
because I don't think I've ever seen that. Now there's a company in Iowa that does Jazzmaster and like JAG style guitars, and I think Nels Klein has one.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure other people have it. It's typically fuzz. Mm-hmm. Fuzz is a circuit you find in guitars like that. So to find modulation or a trem,
yeah,
in that is cool. That's like a curveball.
Yeah, I have that box that has built-in, that box bass that has a built-in fuzz. I will say it's not like the most practical thing. Like, yeah, it just doesn't always work. The novelty wears off after a while.
Yeah.
This tremolo has not worn off to me.
No,
I'm like,
bet,
man, it's so handy to have it, you know?
As our other host would say, John Bollinger, you would say tremolo and reverb is like hot sauce. Just put on everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, for the tremolo freaks out there, knowing it's coming from Fender DNA, can you tell us anything about the circuit? Was it based on like any of the old amps they use, like a Brown Face or anything like that?
You know, I don't remember exactly. I was actually just looking through my phone through text with Matt, and they built me a prototype. Again, I think they just listened to my stuff and,
okay,
were like, and you know, they actually sent me a prototype pedal that I still have, and like, I had to check that out. Sent a little feedback and it came back with this. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was maybe something they pulled from an amp circuit or maybe,
yeah,
you know, they make pedals too, so I was just curious. And is there another guitar you want to talk about, or is this kind of it?
I think these are my main three guitars on this show.
And so,
yeah,
like, these will get the job done,
yeah,
in terms of your live set.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one's new. I've only had it, they just built this prototype and we just got them, you know, on this tour.
Okay.
So I'm still slowly incorporating this one. I'm so used to the other ones that, like, I'm like bringing it in two or three songs a night and just starting to get used to it. I've been playing it in the green room a lot just to kind of get my fingers used to it. I'm so used to that telly that when,
yeah,
I pick that up, it just feels comfortable. So
I do love, and I don't know if it's your call or their call, the block inlays and the black headstock.
Is, yeah, yeah, for
and
sure.
And the gold hardware, it's classy.
Yeah, so the black headstock was because it was supposed to have a black pick guard.
Uh-huh.
We were going to do a black pick guard, and then at the last minute, Matt sent me a white one. He's like, what do you think? This kind of looks more 60s. And then I was like, actually, it looks kind of cool with black and white. Like,
yeah,
that,
yeah. And all these lush sounds we've been hearing so far have coming through a Fender combo. What are you using?
Deluxe Reverb has just been my jam. You know, I have a 65, I have a 72, I have a couple of clones, and then I have this one. You know, sometimes on tour, we do have the 70s one here, right, Brian? I believe, yeah. Bringing vintage gear on the road sometimes is a little finicky.
It's risky business.
Yeah, and these Silverface reissues have actually been really killer. Brian actually found this one on a Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace in Austin, and it also just looked super cool. The toe latch,
yeah,
was awesome. But I'm really digging these Silverface reissues.
Now the blue, was that, so that was, you bought it as is?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then the speaker in the back is kind of unusual.
Yeah,
the,
yeah,
EV.
That guy put that in there, yeah.
And you dig that?
Yeah, I'm digging it. You,
yeah,
know, I've never been like super overly technical with speakers and stuff like that. I hear it and I know if I like it or I don't, but
yeah,
the guy explained it all to me. It sounded good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a Craigslist gone right.
Yeah, man.
Well, let's dive into your pedal board, Adrian. I know we kind of hit the sideboard here with the direct input,
mm-hmm,
stuff and the fuzz, but is the Pog kind of adding to that 335?
Yeah, there's it's one part of the set where I'm using that fuzz, but on the album, I did octaves on the guitar on like a fuzz DI thing.
Okay.
And on that same song on Ice Cream, so that was the Pog was the most compact thing I could get. That little, you know,
yeah,
nano Pog. Yeah,
everything's at noon, so I can't kind of.
No,
take...
so they're not at noon. So that's,
oh,
actually funny. Everybody thinks all my things are at noon. This is a little trick somebody showed me.
Oh,
you just set them, and I mean it's not that advanced, but
no,
somebody
no.
just told me about this. So you set them where you want them, and then for easier, you just mark that's noon, and then,
yeah,
so it doesn't matter where the line actually is, just somebody else has to set them to noon. So it only works with certain ones.
Okay.
But yeah, they're not actually at noon. Like this one, these type of knobs don't work like that, but anyways, yeah, so they're not at noon.
Okay.
A lot of people tell me, they're like, man, you just set everything at noon. I'm like, nah, it's...
Fooled me.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have been like, oh, everything at noon for this.
Yeah.
That sounds just like the Black Pumas. But, well, let's move over to the main board here.
Yeah.
And kind of explain how you're using everything. We obviously touched on the Flint. Is that,
yeah,
an always-on thing?
The Strymon, used to be always on because I always had that reverb. I used to love those Holy Grail spring reverbs. I've tried the most boutique-y of the most boutique-y fanciest spring reverbs, and I always come back to those. These just get it right. You know, I've had people, you know, chew me out about whatever. I don't care. It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So now the Strymon has actually become a second reverb for more reverb on certain songs.
Okay.
But that this, if I had like a desert island one pedal I could do, it would be the Strymon for sure. Because I do still love that reverb, but that tremolo gets used probably once, like every song or every other song.
Now the thing with the Flint, and this might not be something you might dip down to check out, is like, do you have a preferred setting? Because like those Flints have like the 50s, the 60s style.
Yeah, I usually do the top one, which I think is covered. I forget what it is. Well, right now it's not on the top one, but they're all pretty cool. Sometimes I'll get crazy and go down to that 65 photo. It's a little more, I think that's the one that's like a little more bubbly. Like,
chewy, yeah. And can we hear actually both reverbs together? Like,
yeah. So I always have that reverb on.
The Holy Grail's always on.
Yeah, I do love the reverb off the amps, but when we're on tour and doing festivals and playing backline where the amps have been just getting beat up all day long,
yeah,
it wasn't reliable. Sometimes the reverbs don't work. Sometimes they're totally different. So I just need to, I can rely on this, you know.
Good bass line.
So, you know, there's a song like our song Fire that I need like extra stupid reverb, and I'll kick that one on and do like a, you know, that's the extra.
Can we hear the tremolo quick?
Yeah. So I switched it down to the, no, I put it back up. This is the one I normally use. And then this one I dig too. You
know, oh yeah.
That one, but that one doesn't always work for the live show. It's like almost a little too rhythmic or something.
Yeah. And I want to get this on the record because I don't know if it came up in the last one where I did with Esteban and Alejandro, Hermanos Gutierrez. They both have Flints, but you turned them onto it.
Of course
so
I
like
did,
that
yeah.
record that everyone's going to be enjoying next month in May.
I need
it comes
royalties,
out,
bros.
you turned them onto it. They said that was the pedal they couldn't live
without.
Yeah.
Shout out to my boys.
Yeah. Well, let's keep cruising along. We see an EQ pedal. How do you use that?
So yeah, Fender makes these Acoustasonics, and what I really like about them is that, you know, you can run it through an amp, and I do like the sound of an acoustic through an amp.
Yeah.
For the kind of music we play, I'm not, you know, out here playing, you know, singer-songwriter stuff. I like the vibe of an amp, and on our album, actually, quite a few of the acoustic guitars have gone through amps.
Really?
So, yeah, I was able to do this. It's compact. It travels well and stuff, and it's pretty cool. I did realize as soon as we started using it that I did need to EQ it.
Yeah, congrats.
And actually, back to Hermanos, Alejandro uses an EQ pedal too, and I was asking him about his, and he because he switches guitars as well, he just like quickly does that. So I had to kind of EQ. It was running a little bit hotter. I was able to control the level there, and I forget to turn this thing on all the time. Brian, the other day, Brian was like, "Man, I it was on and you didn't notice." I'm like, "Yeah." So this I haven't quite embraced the EQ pedal yet, but in theory, at some point, yeah.
Yeah, it's there. At some point. Now moving down on the bottom row, what do we got next?
Yeah. So This Epoch Boost, this Catalan Bread, I always had an EP Booster, which I love, is another like kind of desert island pedal. Just that a little bit of extra push, you know, for leads. And when you have a kind of a lower wattage amp, it breaks up kind of cool too. And sometimes I like that sound. Mm. Then I discovered this one, and you just have a little more control because you have the boost and you have the preamp.
So you
almost
have
two levels, and you can kind of dial it in a little bit more. If the EP Booster had that, I would have kept the EP Booster, but this is a slight upgrade for me.
I mean, hey, and it's working at the high noon settings like Adrian prefers.
Yeah, everything's high noon, yeah.
So what's the Line 6 pedal? This is a gem.
So I needed a tap tempo delay pedal.
Okay.
We have a song that I always use delay on, but sometimes our tempo kind of fluctuates. We don't play to click tracks or anything like that. Sometimes I like to be able to dial it in as Eric starts the song. I'm like over here tapping. There's not a ton of them that are in as compact as this that sound good.
Okay.
You know, there's some that have like a separate foot switch and stuff like that, but I don't like overkill on the pedal board. This one sounds great. It has tap tempo. You know, I like simple pedals, as you can tell. I don't like too many knobs and stuff. Mm-hmm.
even this one, which I love the sound of it and stuff, but these tiny little knobs, sometimes, I mean, if one thing gets moved like the tiniest bit, yeah, and I don't check it and I'll start the song, it's like completely different. So yeah, I like, you can see I like two or three knobs, one knob if possible. Yeah.
Park fuzz, can we hear how you're running that?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I used to have two or three fuzz pedals here for different songs, and the Park fuzz has just become my jam. When it first came out, I remember a friend of mine had one in the studio, and he told me it was, he's like, yeah, it'd be a good studio pedal, it's not quite a live pedal, but I just still tried it out. Love it. It's just become, it's, I have a ton of other fuzz pedals that I really love that I use in the studio, but they're, fuzz pedals are so finicky and not reliable live. Yeah. Some are too thin, some are too intense, some are too, and I've just found, again, they're not really at high noon, but this gets used on, you know, the whole set, and it's now just the only fuzz I have in here. You can really kind of control it with volume too, you know, like,
yeah. So it sounds, just based on how you were attacking the string, it sounds really responsive.
Yeah,
you can kind of dial it in based on even
how
you're
hitting it. I feel like Nigel from Spinal Tap here playing fuzz for you. Yeah. You hear the sustain.
No, well, I mean, they're making a Spinal Tap too, so who knows?
Oh yeah, I'll be there day one, yeah.
Echo Rec.
The Echo Rec is, I needed another completely different option. I'm honestly still kind of tweaking that one.
Okay.
Totally love it. I love all cattle and bread stuff. I use it a lot in the studio. I'm still tweaking this one, and this is another one that's like any subtle movement will completely change the sound. Absolutely love the sound of it. It's kind of, I've been finally finding the right setting for it, but I'm kind of still tweaking this one like every show. But it's a whole separate option. This is more of a rhythmic, you know.
Because that Echo Rec's trying to get after a tape echo, right?
Yeah, Benson Echo Rec. So yeah, this one I've been using a little bit, just with some slide stuff for effect and just a little bit more dimension.
Mm. And the jam pedal here, the one knobber.
Yeah, so we have a song on our new record that has like heavy phase guitar. And that one was a vintage, like maybe a Maestro that I have in the studio. I can't remember what it was. But, I try to keep things that are reliable, and where I don't like to bring like vintage pedals, especially in particular, don't always do the job live for me. But I was wanting something simple and tried a handful of phase pedals, and they're almost like too complicated. I went to a store in Austin called Austin Guitar House. I explained to them what I was looking for, and I was like, I don't want 100 options, I want it as simple as possible. And they were like, this one has one knob. And I was like, there you go. Tried it, and totally.
And I imagine the knob is set for just control the speed.
But actually, I think it does a combination where it actually pushes a couple of things, but I don't even remember. It sounded good, it worked. I marked it and left it there.
Yeah, add the cart.
Yeah.
And the full tone, is that a wah or expression?
That's wah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been, I just got turned on to the, I mean, I've always had a wah pedal on here. You know, I like a lot of late 60s, early 70s guitar players, and always had a wah pedal. I don't necessarily use it. I use it always for rhythmic stuff. I don't really use it for a lot of lead stuff, not like a lot of Super Hendrix-y or anything like that, but more like, you know, that kind of stuff. But I was at a friend's studio recently, and he had one of these, played it, and I fell in love with it. I texted Brian. I'm like, man, I just got turned on to this full tone thing. And then I Googled it, and everybody's like, yeah, those are like the, you know, the coolest. But I feel like it's a lot warmer. The range, it stays warm through the whole range, and you can kind of dial it in, which I haven't even done. You can really dial in the buffer zone and all this stuff. But it really stays warm through the whole sweep, you know. So I just converted to these like 2 months ago.
The one thing I noticed, just how you're using it real quick there, it almost reminds me of a Roto Vibe or something like Jerry Cantrell would use with Alice in Chains, just almost more vibe than a standard wah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And same thing with the jam pedal there. I know it's a phaser, but again, it reminded me more of a vibe, kind of lushness.
The other cool thing with wah that I like is, you know, it's an instant tone switch for just, you know, just like melodic kind of tenor guitar lines, as I say. You know, like it just cuts through.
speaking of another Texas guitarist, he loves his wah. He has it on all, a lot of times. I don't know if it's an auto wah or wah, but Mark from Crinbin.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big part of his sound. Yeah. Yeah, man, he's incredible. Yeah,
yeah, he sets it and forgets it. But Adrian, I think we're going to talk to Brian and Brendan. So
all right.
I really appreciate your
time,
man.
Hey, thank you, man.
Yeah, this has been great.
Appreciate it, yeah.
Hey, y'all, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So our rig rundowns for a long time now have been sponsored by D'Addario. And I'm thrilled to be using the D'Addario Expand pedal board. I've got this little guy that fits in my gig bag. And like many of you, I'm changing pedals all the time. I love having a board that can shrink as I'm shrinking my board or expand as I'm expanding it. And that's why I love the Expand pedal board. Their patented telescoping technology lets me instantly change the size of my pedals playground. It also features a unique cable management system and comes fitted with loops of Velcro, keeping everything neat and easy to swap. The two Expand versions comes with either one or two rows, depending on your needs. So a big thanks to D'Addario. Now, let's get back to more rig rundown.
All right, now I am joined by Brendan, the bass player. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good to be here.
You got noticed in Music City. How'd that feel?
It felt great, I tell you. It doesn't happen often.
And you got to mention that you were a bass player, and people didn't, you know,
didn't recoil in fear. Yeah. That's what normally happens. They're actually disgusted. No, it was great. Love it here. We're at the Ryman. What can you ask for? Can you ask for more?
Yeah. I bet you it's a treat to play. You guys play beautiful venues all over the world, but hopefully this gem of ours in Nashville is a treat for
yeah,
visitors.
Yeah. Are you from out here?
Oh, yeah. We live here. We're based here.
Oh, no. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. We love it here. And obviously, the Ryman is something very special to any musician. So.
Yeah. I got to do something. And this is about me. I'm going to do it for 5 seconds. I actually named my son Ryman.
Really?
He's 4 months old. So, yeah, I named my son Ryman.
Well,
I
that's
did it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
But we're not talking about me or my son. We're talking about your bass. Tell me about this beauty.
Yeah, so this is as you correctly pointed out, a 1974 Fender P. I'll tell you how I got this thing.
Yeah.
I've always played Fenders, just when I was, you know, coming up in bass, it was just what you did. And Fender had started giving me some nice basses, and I never had nice basses.
Yeah.
But then we went to the Wilco Loft, and they said, hey, do you want to play Jeff Tweedy's P? And I said, well, yeah, of course, obviously I want to.
Yeah.
But I didn't, I was like, yeah, I'll just play whatever bass. I'm not very picky.
Yeah. You know?
But then I picked it up. It's like this heavy thing. And I'm sitting here, I'm like playing it. I'm like, this is like a different instrument. It felt so solid. Everything was, I mean, obviously the amp was awesome. Everything was great. But the bass was like, I'd never experienced just like, just even physically, tonally, everything was like, wow. So I didn't even go home. I flew home after that tour, and there's a guitar shop called Austin Vintage Guitars right next to my house, or where I was living at the time.
How close are we talking?
We're talking two blocks.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, well, listen, yeah. So I went, I'll tell you something about that in a second, because I didn't even go home. I went straight to the Austin Vintage Guitars, and my buddy Greg Rhodes is there, and I said, look, dude, I played this P at the Wilco Loft. I've got to get one. And he said, you're in luck. We've got this 74. It's a little lighter weight. I'm an older guy. My back hurts.
Yeah.
So this is great. And I played it and I was like, this is perfect. Because it has that same sort of, I don't know what, man. It's like the je ne sais quoi of like a heavy instrument that sounds amazing. And it really is different. Like I have a backup that's like a, it's an amazing bass. It's a 2022, one of these Fender reissues with all the electronics, the dual pickup and stuff. It's like night and day playing this thing. It's like something, especially with this kind of music, it's like just really nice.
What would you pinpoint, or what would you describe the difference being?
I think the first thing I remember is like, and I don't know anything about how these bridges, like you can tell this is a new bridge because you can see the old holes, but something about the string response to start just feels, you know, that one, it's super light. It doesn't quite have the same. It's like I almost compare it to like a drummer.
Okay.
Like, you know, when you have a snare head and you're like, it's like got a certain kind of bounce to it. Uh-huh. I feel the same way with, you know, like strings. And I'm probably wrong. I'm no technician.
Your opinion is yours, so go with it.
But it just feels like it feels so solid in a way that it just never got with the other basses that I've always played, which is or like, you know, fine. They're just, for a long time, I had like the $200 P that I bought off of Homie for.
Yeah.
For a while. Like, I was playing that thing forever.
Really?
And so, this was a couple years ago when I got this, but I really love it. And so, yeah, I've been playing this ever since. And
do you remember what actual bass? I know it sounds like an old P that you played at the Wilco Loft. That was Jeff's. Because he has an arsenal of vintage equipment.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, yes. Oh, yeah. So, I can't remember. I think it was a 62 or 63. It might have been the classic kind of like Holy Grail model.
Yeah.
It was black. It's probably, they have a, if you don't know, they have this amazing Instagram where they, the Wilco Loft does, where they actually showcase all the kind of quirky and awesome
gear. As they
should,
it's like a museum.
It is, it really is. And the guy, I wish I could remember his name, he's such a nice guy, the guy that sort of manages that studio / workspace, lovingly curates this Instagram account, and he manages all the gear, and he's such a nice guy. And he told me a little bit about that P, but I don't know much about it other than it was like 62, Holy Grail, played great, sounded amazing. And yeah, I think I was playing through like an Ampeg or something, but it just sounded awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those like pinch me moments, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I'm a big Wilco fan too. And the other thing that me and some of my bandmates did was we went home and tried to find our own spot. Because the great thing about that space is like you just walk in and there's no friction between you and creativity immediately. You know, it's just the whole place is designed to walk in and start working, which it was really inspiring. Because me, I'm like on the couch and I'm just like, oh, should I do something cool? You know, so having a space where that. So we went and got actually right next to Adrian's studio. But anyway, so.
Well, now are you using your fingers exclusively for the Black Plume
stuff? For this band, yeah, for sure. So I've got flat ones on here. I think they're D'Addario. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, D'Addario.
Thanks, D'Addario. D'Addario?
D'Addario, D'Addario, I don't know. All I know is that they do, they sponsor the Rig Rundown, so.
Hey, well,
D'Addario,
listen.
However
let me tell you something.
We love you.
I'm not joking around. These strings are awesome. Not that I know that much about strings, but if I can tell the difference, I think, when they're different. So thanks to D'Addario. D'Addario. D'Addario.
Now, are you changing them, or are those flat ones kind of like tetanus shot level?
That's a funny thing you mentioned, because forever I was sort of like, I'll never change these strings.
Yeah.
In fact, I used to work at Willie Nelson's studio, and my boss at the time, there was a bass in there, and I was like, man, I was just kind of playing it, like, we're setting up for a session in there, and I was like, oh, man, these strings are like, this is when I, before I even really played bass, and the dead sound, like, I didn't realize that you were going for that.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I think these strings need to be changed. He said, no one changes their fucking bass strings, man. You know, and I was like, oh, and I'll always remember that. But Brian has been convincing me to occasionally change, because they get a little crusty, you know, and gross.
Well, I got to ask a question that is kind of divergent of this topic, but it's music related. How does one get a job at Willie Nelson's?
So that's an interesting story. So
lay it on us.
So I was in bands, but I was a trumpet player for a long time. I didn't start bass until I was in my 20s. But
it's a logical jump. Trumpet
I think so, yeah. They're both monophonic, you know. Flea actually is a trumpet player.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's actually a lot of similarity
between. I was trying to make a joke and now I'm an asshole.
No. I've heard that before, but it does make a lot of sense, you know. Bass is this strange combination of rhythm and melody.
Yeah.
You sort of exist in this hybrid zone. And trumpet's obviously a very melodic instrument, but they sort of complement one another, I think.
You've swayed me. I am converted.
Great, yeah.
No, continue with your story about how you landed in Willie Nelson.
Oh, yeah. So it's just one of those things, like, I'm from Austin. I've always been there. And I was in bands, you know, in the early, maybe middle 2000s. I was graduating high school, and my high school emo band was doing stuff over in Austin. And I played trumpet because we were all really super into this band American Football and of the sort of classic first wave, second wave emo.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's relevant. I think a guy.
Anyway, you can segue or insert American Football into a.
Anyway. This guy Jared saw the band. He was like, "Man, you guys are great," and I can't remember how, but I somehow conned him into being like, "Hey, man, I'm looking for a studio, like an assistant gig," because I was interested in that, and sort of like, you know, I think I had taken some college classes in the mixing room at UT, and he. To my surprise, was like, yeah, come on in. We need someone. We just, you know, we just lost someone or something, and come on in. And so Jared and then Jacob Skiba, who at the time was one of the head engineers over there, they totally changed my life. That was an amazing experience.
Oh, cool.
And such a great studio. And watching real musicians work in that way, incredible.
I'm sure it was inspiring.
I mean, inspiring and just like, I'm never going to be that good.
You know? So, like, you found your way here.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. But I mean, you know, like, I remember we did a session with Willie, which is a pretty rare occurrence, even in those days, just because, you know, he goes all over the place.
Yeah.
But so there was a Willie session, and they had these guys from Nashville actually in there. And they cut a 10 song record that was essentially flawless in like 5 hours.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And just watching these guys, and then, you know, the bass player, who was also the band leader, I think, you know, would chart them out real quick, chart out the tunes. And then like this amazing mandolin player, they're just cutting it all live. And then the mandolin player would say, hey, I think I need to punch, line 3, bar 4 or whatever in the bridge or whatever. And then he would just do it, he would just nail it. And then next song, next tune. And seriously, like 5 hours, it was like 10 songs, and it was flawless.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
So watching that was really inspiring. And then, you know, just getting to see musicians. I actually, seeing so many musicians, you know, you're like, I want to be on the other side of the glass. You know, like, it was really fun. But I started taking music a little more seriously. And then, here we are.
Now you're here.
Yeah.
Well, we got the 74 with the Dario strings.
Yep. Flat ones, of course.
Talk to me about the Super Bassman.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know if, you know, Adrian, we're a Fender band through and through. They've been really great to us. And I actually, the first time I played a Super Bassman, I didn't even know what it was. But I was like, why does this amp, it was kind of like with the P, I was like, why does this amp sound so good?
Yeah.
And so ever since then, I've always wanted one. I never really had one. And then, you know, a couple, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, when I joined the band and we were going on tour, at some point in our journey, someone was like, well, what do you want to bring on tour? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, what's your rig like? And I said, dude, I don't own an amp. I've always just borrowed a Rumble from, like, the bandmate. Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
Boy.
And so I was like, well, that's pretty, I was like, man, and I hung up the phone with the production manager at the time, and I was like, that's kind of embarrassing. I should go get an amp. So I went to this guitar shop in Austin. I think it's called, I can't remember what it's called. But I bought this, and we've used it ever since. That was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. But it's great. It sounds exactly the way you want to, because, you know, the goal, you can tell that's like almost too round. But that's the goal.
Yeah.
No finger noise. It's all about the punchy sort of like round, you know, like Motown stacks or something like that. At least how I interpret that sound, which is like just a percussive. It's almost like percussive. And this amp is perfect for that because it's tube. I have two channels if I need the overdrive, which I almost never use anymore. But I have it, at some point I ducked the mids, but I almost always just ran everything at 5 because I'm an unsophisticated rube. And, but yeah, I mean, it just sounds to me, for this type of music especially, perfect.
It's a great pairing.
Yes.
That bass and then the tube head.
Yeah, right. And it's just got it's not so round like a Rumble or something, or any sort of solid state that you might get.
Yeah.
That's not really sophisticated like some of the ones we were talking about earlier. But it also gets this sort of like high harmonic buzz thing that you get, which is the perfect, like, it's the perfect hybrid, you know? Like, I want it to be really round, but I also don't want it to sound like a dead, something
or
dead.
Like a fart or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, to me, and I think this is actually a little too dark, but yeah, it's like just enough kind of high frequency buzz or something, whatever that sort of harmonic picture that you're painting is like in there with this amp. And it's probably not with the other amps that I've done, which admittedly have been like the Rumble. And I toured with one time I was in the UK with this band, and they were like, oh yeah, we got you an amp. And it was this orange that was like that big. And I think, I don't play very loud, but I think I blew it out like day 3.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So, so that's the amp picture.
Now, what are you on the control set? Are you wide open? Or are you messing with those throughout
the
set?
No, I'm wide open. Okay. I think the DI here does a lot of work because,
Well, tell us about it. You got a pedal board, so that's official, but
I do. Actually,
only
it took
me,
I used to just run with a Snark, so Brian helped me out.
Slapped him on the wrist. Yeah.
Especially in the 74, you don't do that.
I know, you can't. So this is an Acme Motown DI. That's kind of what does some of the work. I think that transistor, like, tightens the signal and makes it, it just takes all of my crud and like makes it
sweetens it.
Yeah, makes it passable, I think. Now, I don't know how it does that, but I think it sounds great.
Yeah.
Actually, the first time I had one of those, used one of those, it was in Adrian's studio. And then we were on the road, and our front of house guy, Jeff Bird at the time, had one. And so he's like, we're not using the house ones, we're going to use mine. And so then I bought one because it sounded so good.
Yeah.
And then a JHAS color box,
yeah,
which I'm sure your viewers will be familiar with.
How are you using that? Because there's a lot of applications.
I know. Let me tell you. I'm not, no one's going to be proud of me for this.
Come on.
But I use it for overdrive. So it gives, it's like the best overdrive pedal ever because it's so functionally flexible.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like using a chef's knife to like chop down a branch or something, you know? I actually use it at home for a preamp sometimes because it's so good.
Yeah, and like it has an XLR preamp out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I use it for like the perfect amount of like in the really dramatic moments. I think there's like two or three in our set right now. I'll kick that on and just shake the rafters for like 5 seconds.
Is that like a high point for you?
I do enjoy it. Yeah, I do enjoy it. And the lights come up, you know, it's like, yes. Yeah, of course, you know. I mean, you really like to get some of that amp sound, you know.
Yeah.
And I get enough amp sound, but when you kick the thing on,
I'm here, baby.
One righteous signal, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brent, I can't tell you, it's been a complete joy to talk to you. And
hey,
you,
ditto. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, cheers.
And, we're going to talk to Brian about Eric's gear.
All right.
Last but not least, we are joined by Brian. He had stepped in earlier, kind of made a cameo, handing the guitar to Adrian. So, Brian, you're officially part of the Rig Rundown now. Thank you for doing this, and you're going to cover Eric's gear.
Yeah, happy to be here.
How should we start? I see a pair of Gibsons. Where should we go?
Eric's kind of main sound. Eric started busking on the Santa Monica Pier,
yep,
with an acoustic guitar. He used to take the bus from the city out to Santa Monica and busk to make some money and play some songs. So Eric at heart is an acoustic player,
mm-hmm,
very much songwriter type, where you just kind of meld your voice with the guitar kind of thing. So arch tops, semi-hollows really work well for his aesthetic, musically, mm-hmm, visually, like they just look great in his hand, you know,
yeah,
the size fits. So this arch top is a 59. And
all vibe.
Yeah, single P90. It's super simple. It's wonderful. It sounds perfect. I mean, it's really dependable. We've been all over the world with this guitar, and
so no issues being a hollow body, and then
no,
because
his
P90
tone is very clean. So
okay,
he's just on the verge of breakup. So he's on wireless because of the amount of movement that he does on stage. So we have a wireless unit off stage that we run through our subsnake.
Okay.
And we go XLR out of the subsnake and into a DI. And we sometimes use a reamp, a radio reamp, but right now we're using one of the JDIs, I believe, in reverse. So we're going from line level to instrument level and then going into the first pedal, which is the tuner. And then, so that's kind of his signal into the amp.
That's a really, not creative way, but that's a definitely step up from normally just having like a Shure pedal board tuner or something in the rack. That's a very...
Yeah, we had... Well, the trouble...
Audiophile
the
way to do
it. The thing is we're dealing with different outputs. The pickups have, you know, different,
yeah,
resistance and stuff. So we're using the couple different packs. We're running two wireless channels. So we're, you know, needing to have the separation. So we can control that off stage. We're summing with a 2-to-1.
Okay.
And then, you know, basically he's only using, you know, we alternate between the two guitars depending upon which song he's playing or which part of the set he's playing. But the thing with the arch top is that it's one that's great for a song like Colors, Stay Gold. There's a new song called Tomorrow that he's playing it on.
Mm-hmm.
We do a cover of Fast Car a lot that this one works really well for.
Yeah,
because
I saw him in the balcony a couple,
yeah,
years ago with that guitar.
And that's a capo on the fifth fret, so obviously you're going to be higher up the neck, but it works well. The arch top works well for that, as does the semi-hollow, but the arch top especially because it's got that vibe of him busking.
Yeah.
And it has that very acoustic, raw, clear kind of sound, you know, that we really like. And I would say this sound is definitive of Eric Burton's,
yeah,
tone. And because of the wireless and the signal chain, like there's obviously gain introduced with wireless versus running cable in. So we kind of control all that and keep a really on the verge of breakup tone that sounds present, full bodied, and clear.
And he is using both reverb and the tremolo.
Yep.
On this one.
Yeah, the reverb is pretty much, it's kind of prominent, but we're only at 3.
Yeah.
So it's not super crazy. And then our tremolo is also at 3, and we kind of mix to taste. Every amp kind of is a little different.
Yeah.
This is obviously our band owned, but when we have backline, you know, rental, sometimes you'll get an amp that it doesn't respond till it's at 10, you
yeah.
know, it just depends. But it's a really cool, clear, woody tone that Eric achieves with what we have going on. So,
and it goes really well with Adrian's sound, and obviously the whole band in full flight. It's yeah. everything works together like a sandwich rather yep. than like trying to stand out in one way or the other.
Yeah. And we've done a lot of promo and just kind of duo filmings and stuff like that. And it's really cool when you isolate their two approaches and their tones.
Yeah.
In that type of setting, because Adrian comes from a very Spanish background in his playing mm-hmm. and his approach, obviously with so much finger attack with that nail he's talking about, percussiveness, and then using the pick too in his lead playing. And Eric doesn't use picks, he's all fingers. So when he rakes across the strings, he's using his finger.
It's a part of his DNA yeah. getting rubbed off.
Yeah, and I don't really know, honestly, if he ever used picks, if that was anything that like he started, or he just, you know, sometimes when you're playing, it's like you lose a pick or you can't yeah. find a pick and you're like, damn, you know? But I think it adds warmth to his tone.
Strings, what should we know that's getting used on these Gibsons?
So we're using D'Addario, thanks to Aaron at D'Addario for hooking us up. We're always 11 to 49s. And sometimes we dabble with flat wounds on this one, but lately we've been sticking to round wounds for everything. But yeah, he likes a 11 gauge.
And I imagine standard on all the
yep.
songs.
Yeah, we're all standard 440, which makes it pretty easy.
Yeah. And to breeze through the pedal board after the tuning, you have a Mosaic from Digitech. How's that getting used?
So that pedal, we do a lot of flying. So we have, you know, anyone that flies with gear knows yeah. that, you know, you either checking on an airline, or we have stuff freighted, cargoed place to place. So adding additional items is, you know, another thing to keep track of, another thing to weigh into the cost of everything, or just another thing to keep track of.
Yeah.
And so on the record, he used a 12 string guitar on October 33, and he wanted to achieve that same sound. And to make that cohesive across semi, you know, full band gear owned yeah. band gear shows and our fly dates, I said, I think we can achieve that effect with some kind of pedal. So I think we're still deciding if we like this Mosaic, but you know, I started researching and I'm like, oh, 12 string simulators or emulators, and this had the most feedback of what people thought was a close in the ballpark. You know, it doesn't have the same cadence as a 12 string acoustic, but they can be very cumbersome in transit. So
now, is that coming from you as a trying to find a solution for your artist you're supporting, is that more of a workaround for cartage and fees that, you know, cost that you said earlier, or is it a thing that you don't want to tune a 12 string guitar?
You know,
that's a job into itself.
I'm not afraid of tuning any type of acoustic. I know how to do it on a live stage. I have a lot of experience with it. The 12 string, I think they sound amazing.
Yeah.
Like they're so dope. It's more about logistics, to be yeah. honest, you know, and we do that song in every set. So we do a lot of festivals. So there'll be, sometimes it's a headline set, sometimes it's 45 minutes, sometimes it's an hour. And it's like, you know, in those types of environments, you know, I believe in consistency, and you deliver the same show every city in terms of like your approach, you
yeah.
know, that's how it's like when you leave the house, or you're out in Hollywood drinking or
yeah.
whatever, and you leave your wallet somewhere, you
I've
know.
I've been known to do that.
If you have your your wallet in the same spot all the time and you reach for it, then you know it's going to be there. Yeah. You leave your phone at night on the same at the same spot, or you creatures of habit and you do the same thing over and over again. I'm a believer that that is a good way on the road to execute what we do, which is packing everything in boxes and unloading it the next place and knowing where everything is,
yeah,
and knowing what to expect. And when something's not working, to know what it should sound like and be like, oh, that's not right, I need to fix that, or something's off, or, you know, things like that.
That practical answer leads me to believe that you're a very efficient and well-mannered and very, you know, a well-to-do tech.
Yeah.
That should be in demand, considering that that's your goal as someone that has this gig.
Yes, I definitely have a very articulate approach.
And you've performed, so it's like you're also a player.
Yeah, I was a player, you know, for 15 years before I started teching. So I understand exactly what it's like to be up here. I've played every type of gig there is to play. So my, what's the word? My adaptation to different environments, different clubs, different arenas, different theaters, different amphitheaters, whatever, I know kind of what to expect. I know I'm always a couple steps ahead, 3-4 steps ahead sometimes, just to make sure that you have a backup plan in place, yeah, whether that be amps or extra cables or backup guitars, or just like, I got really good at restringing guitars touring with my band because I had one guitar that we could afford to bring each over to Europe. And I used to play this, the guys that own Lakeland Bass had a side company called Hanson Guitars.
Yeah.
And I have a Chicagoan, and it has a Bigsby. And anyone knows, restringing a Bigsby, especially quickly, is very difficult with speed. So I learned how to jump off stage and throw a string, if I broke a string, on that Bigsby before the next song started. And so just knowing where your strings are, knowing,
yeah,
like having a tuner off, little things like that, it bleeds into this type of profession, and well, I find that very useful.
While I got you, before we get to the last Telecaster, we'll show off quick of Eric's collection here on the road. What is something a guitar player or tech should have on hand at all times to best save their ass in a moment, whether it's strings or whatever it could be that you find yourself either having or it saved you? What is that tool or item or?
Does it have to be one?
Could be whatever comes to mind.
Okay, for me, something that I've always believed in carrying is a screwdriver.
Okay.
Whether it's a multi-heads, different Phillips or star bit or whatever.
Yeah.
Because nothing's worse than being on stage and having a strap button or a strap lock break out of the body or fall out of the body, and you know, it goes flying across the stage. You know, if you have a screwdriver and you just think to check those every now and then,
yeah,
that's important. A tuner obviously is important, and making sure that you have backup batteries for things that might need battery power, because that's also something that can be a showstopper if you're using batteries or something like that for the gig. So that's my approach. Obviously on the road, we bring a lot more than just that.
Yeah, of course.
You have to plan for the worst kind of thing, but yeah.
Well, you heard from Brian. Those are three things to put in your gig bag right now, folks. Let's check out that Tele quick.
Cool, yeah.
All right, tell me about this thing. This is sparkly and shiny.
Yeah, this is a prototype that Eric designed with Fender. Kind of like one of your dream guitar situations of,
yeah,
you know, getting to design something from start to finish. It's very clear. It has great versatility with the single coil versus the P90, which obviously we know is, you know, based on a single coil, you know,
point-amp
humbucker. But this is actually a really hot P90, which is great. And the Telecaster with the F-hole has a great resonation in line with his use of semi-hollow and arch-top type of guitars. The Bigsby is something that comes into play more as a toy. It's not part,
yeah,
of any song in particular. But this is a really reasonably weighted guitar, considering the amount of metal on it.
Yeah.
And it plays great. It's got great tension. And he's got a cool balance symbol there. Eric has some very good spiritual values. So
we talked off camera with kind of the gold hardware, the pick guard, and the purple finish kinda gives a Prince vibe.
Absolutely. This definitely has a very vibrant feel and something about Eric that I feel like translates through this guitar is that he takes liberties all the time in terms of fashion and things that he wears.
Yeah.
The guy can pull off anything.
Yeah.
So to have a guitar that is as Prince would be, very glamorous man.
Yeah. You
know, to have a guitar that would emulate that type of thing, I think, is totally fitting for Eric Burdon,
it's like
for
a,
sure.
It's like a Coupe de Ville with six strings.
Yep.
It's classy.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I mean, guitars, it's age-old tale. They're kind of like a cool car or a hot rod, you know, or a hot chick. It's like they're attractive in so many ways, and it's something, I guess, if you understand that passion, then it makes sense to you. And not everyone gets that, but they're wonderful.
I guarantee you one thing, Brian, everyone that watches this gets what you're saying.
Yep.
But before we leave and exit the Ryman Auditorium, we got to hear the 59.
Sure.
Because this thing is just beautiful. And like Perry noticed when we pulled it out of the vault earlier, that thing's thin. Like we don't see many of these off, you know, out of a museum case. So like to get up close personal with one of these is.
Yeah, I'm not like a super, you know, museum knowledge person by any means. But I know that they made the 125 and then the 125T. And this is the T because it's like the thin line or something along those lines.
Because I know the
125 is like an actual hollow body.
Yeah, it's like Scotty Moore. And he was like kind of hunked over that when he was playing with Elvis.
But this one, it has that bluesy kind of.
Man. And we're getting this through our lofts. We're not actually plugged in this mic. So whatever you're hearing, don't discredit this guitar. Because what you're hearing it in is a beautiful room and it's a beautiful guitar. And Brian, I really appreciate your time. I know you're looking after all three guys today. Both Adrian and Brendan were a treat to be around. Yeah. And you are the same, my friend.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your time. You guys stay safe out there and keep rocking.
When you sound better, you play better. So you sound better.